Good Weekend Talks is a new podcast from the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age.
It's a deep dive, once a week, into Australia's definitive stories.
I'm Good Weekend editor, Katrina Strickland.
And I'm Good Weekend senior writer, Conrad Marshall.
On Good Weekend Talks,
we take a long-form look at the people,
places and issues
that matter to you.
Devour the issue in depth.
And learn the backstory and craft behind some of Good Weekend's most popular pieces.
Find out how Mullumbimby became ground zero for the anti-vaxxer movement in Australia.
Meet Helen O'Connell, the Melbourne urologist who mapped the clitoris.
Explore the complicated and highly vexed issue of concussion in sport.
And take a look inside Scott Morrison's Pentecostal church.
It's your favourite magazine, brought to life for your ears, your heart and your soul.
Subscribe now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Please Explain. I'm Tori Maguire. Each week, we dissect the news with experienced journalists from the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. Filling in for me as host this week is Chris Sapone. I'll hand you over to him. Thanks, Chris.
This is Please Explain. I'm Chris Sapone. In the past week, the share market has suffered its biggest dive since the global financial crisis. On Monday, Wall Street plunged and the effects have been felt across share markets in Australia and Europe. So is coronavirus to blame, or were we headed towards a recession anyway? And what does a recession mean for Australians? Joining me on this week's episode of Please Explain is Matt Wade, who is a senior economics writer at the Sydney Morning Herald. So let me ask you, what is happening over the past week in the share market in Australia and in the world?
I guess the current episode, you have to go back to sort of probably late February, just a couple of weeks back. It's interesting to reflect that on February the 21st, the Australian share market reached a record high. But since then, things completely changed. And the main factor, of course, is the coronavirus outbreak that we first heard about in mid-January. But then I guess the consequences of that, the economic fallout from that virus and what it might do to the global economy and to local economies as well, started to become more and more apparent. And for some reason, the share market took a fair while to respond to that. But then, as I said, in the last week of February, sentiment completely shifted and we started to see these big downward movements in the share price. That's basically been going ever since. So it's been a long period of decline. At first we saw, I guess, companies that were obviously exposed to the effects of the coronavirus to be hit first, travel companies, airlines and the like, because they were obviously being affected by travel bans and so forth. But then I think there's gradually been a growing understanding or awareness of how this is really going to hit the economy more broadly. And therefore, investors are trying to price at what level that's going to really take effect. And so trying to find a price for the companies that they invest in that reflects the new reality of an economy that's being affected by the coronavirus. The other point to make is, though, that this week there's been an added complication, and that is that Russia walked away from an OPEC plan, which was to basically reduce oil production. And this was following a decline in demand due to coronavirus. But when Russia walked away from that, basically there was a massive fall in the oil price. Saudi Arabia also responded by cutting its prices. And the oil price actually fell 30% at one point. That eruption, if you like, triggered yet another huge sell-off on the global share markets. And Australia was hit pretty hard. We've got a lot of companies that produce commodities in this country. And so the share market really took a big dive on Monday and is, you know, really down very sharply since, as I say, that record high back in February.
So I understand that the price of oil and energy flows through to other parts of the economy. And is there any sense that these plunges in the oil price are going to continue to push inflation lower than where it is now? And if so, what kind of problem does that create for an economy?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Obviously, there's a silver lining to a lower oil price, and that is the price at the petrol bowser is lower, and that's good for consumers. So in some ways, the big fall in oil prices will eventually flow through to the hip pocket of consumers across the world, in Australia as well. That should have a positive impact on spending because people can spend that money that they would otherwise have spent on petrol for their cars on, you know, other things in the economy. So it's not all downside.
So getting back to the effect of the coronavirus in the market, if it's true that markets dislike uncertainty, what is the uncertainty around coronavirus that is so troubling to investors and to the sentiment that investors rely on for a buoyant market?
I guess what it is an uncertainty. It's taken time, as I said, it took a while for the share market to really respond, but I just guess there was this growing realization. Once travel bans started to be imposed and there was this very dramatic alteration of behaviour, especially around travel. But then we started to learn about how, especially in China, which is so fundamental to a lot of what we call supply chains, that is, you know, the way that goods are produced with lots of different components coming together to produce whatever it might be, what we might want to buy. I mean, a good example is technology and equipment like phones or iPads or whatever. They really do require these very sophisticated supply chains, and there started to be evidence coming up that those were being disrupted because China, which manufactures so many things, had really shut down large parts of its economy. Economists often think in terms of supply and demand. In the early stages of the crisis, we saw the supply of goods and services was being affected by this disruption to the Chinese economy especially. But I think now that time's gone on, we've also started to see demand affected, where consumers, households, people like you and me have become cautious and worried about what might be the effects on our own budgets. There's no doubt some people maybe are getting less work. Some may have lost jobs, or at least they're getting fewer hours. And so now we're seeing those two things really taking a big effect on activity in the economy. And of course, the share market responds because basically we're investing in firms that provide these goods and services. And if there's going to be an effect on their profitability, investors are reacting.
So can you talk about the impact that this will have on the economy, given that there are more people today that are in casual work than, say, a generation ago? Would they be the ones that are in the most exposed position?
Yeah, well, I think it's a really interesting thing to remember, first of all, that the share market is not the economy. Sometimes we make the mistake of seeing the ups and downs of the share market as somehow a proxy for how the economy's going. That's not the case. So what's going on in the real world, which is really the gist of your question, I think that we've seen, as I said earlier, the front line of those businesses being affected, if you like, are those that are most exposed to especially the travel ban and also the reaction of consumers not to sort of travel so much. So obviously the tourism industry, which was already coping with the bushfire sort of tragedy, has been very directly affected. We also see international education, the university sector basically, which has been incredibly successful over the past 10 years. You know, our university sector has grown very rapidly because we've been very good at attracting students from overseas, especially from China. But the travel ban on China had a direct impact on that sector. And the interesting thing is there, in both those sectors, both tourism and international education, if you like, there's a lot of businesses that rely on the demand created by tourists and by international students. So, you know, whether it's retail trade, whether it's cafes and restaurants and accommodation, and other services to the visitors to Australia, whether they're students or tourists, purchase. They're a really important part of the economy. So we're starting to see all those sectors affected by that ripple sort of effect. The other thing I guess I'd say is the interesting dynamic here is so far we haven't seen the announcement of major job losses, which has been good. But I do think that there's been a big impact on people's incomes and, I guess, participation in the labour market anyway, because of what you say. We now have a much higher rate of casual workers, contract workers and so forth, who they're not on your stock standard work conditions that you might have found most of the workers in the economy were employed in that style, say, 20, 30 years ago. So what we've seen is casuals are not being called into work and they're going to have fewer hours. The interesting thing there is it's not really showing up in announcement by companies that we're laying off lots of workers, but it will eventually show up in our economic figures. So I'm expecting that we will see an increase in what we call the underutilization of labor. That is, there's a lot of people out there who work part-time, casually, and so forth. Some of them would probably like to have more hours. What we're going to see, this is really crunch that, and people will be getting fewer hours than maybe they used to. We see it at a time like this, where companies do tend to hoard labor. That is, they don't want to let their best workers go. You know, they're trained, they're trusted, they know how to do the job, they're familiar with the people involved, they get on with one another. It also is very expensive eventually to rehire and retrain new workers. So we're at the point where companies are really trying to hang on to their workers. So they're actually asking them to go on leave, they're asking them to keep working but maybe less hours, maybe asking them to take unpaid leave but try to keep them on the books. And that's a very, well, it's a good reaction. It's a sensible thing for businesses to do. But eventually, if the crisis continues and demand remains very weak, they'll eventually have to shed that workforce.
You're listening to Please Explain. I'm Chris Sapone. We'll be right back after this. Matt, remembering back to the global financial crisis, it took really years for some parts of the economy and some businesses to get back on sound footing again. Looking at the market falls and the dramatic sort of change in outlook and sentiment for countries around the world and economies around the world, how long do you expect this coronavirus to affect our economy and the global economy?
The first thing to say about that is this is a very different crisis to the global financial crisis. That was a financial market meltdown. All of a sudden, the global financial system seized. It's very scary, and that then spilt over, if you like, into the real economy because people started to worry about whether they'd be able to get savings out of the banks. Banks were collapsing. This is a very different one. This is a health crisis, but as I said before, it's kind of having an effect on both the supply and the demand sides of our economy. And it is very unpredictable. You can kind of see that in the behavior of the share market, where it's plunged dramatically in the last 2 weeks or fortnight or so. But during this week, we've also seen recoveries. So it would seem that there's investors out there who are saying, well, I'm going to get in on this now because I think we're going to have a pretty quick recovery. So we've heard the alphabet soup of recoveries. There's the V shape, there's the U shape, and there's the L shape. The V shape recovery, of course, is one that where things plunge very quickly. There's a rapid reassessment and everything recovers very quickly. Let's hope that's what happens here. There's the U shape recovery where things plunge. It plateaus at the bottom and then eventually recovers. And then there's the more worrying L-shaped recovery, which where you have a big fall and it sort of demand and activity in the economy remains very subdued for a fair period. And that obviously has the most lasting and damaging effects. I think it's a bit too early to judge what this one's going to be. It will depend very much on how the health crisis plays out. This economic challenge, if you like, is very dependent on what happens in that health story.
Now, Matt, during the global financial crisis, one of the tools that the governments had at their disposal was the ability to lower rates to stimulate the economy. It's going to be a little bit different this time around. Isn't that right?
Well, it's interesting. In some ways, we're still living in the shadow of the global financial crisis. Yes, it's a decade ago. Things have really moved on since then. But there's been a couple of unusual developments in that decade that economists in some ways are still trying to explain. We've had very subdued wages growth and we've had very low interest rates for that whole period. And in fact, they haven't got anywhere near to the levels that they were back to the levels that they were prior to the GFC, no matter where you are in the world. So if you like, we're in a new environment on the monetary policy landscape. And I think that means that the reaction or the response this time will have to be quite different. We entered the global financial crisis, especially in Australia, with the economy in a very healthy shape and the federal budget in good shape and interest rates that were much higher. And so that gave officials the scope to slash interest rates and to provide budget stimulus, and a lot of it. But now in this sort of post-GFC era, interest rates are very low, in fact at record lows, even before the coronavirus hit. And we'd have to say, while the federal budget has gradually improved, it's still in deficit. And, you know, obviously that's a very different situation to when we approached the GFC. However, we still have those two policy tools, or the government still has those two policy tools at its disposal. For example, we now know we've had a lot of experiment over the last 10 years in what they call as unconventional monetary policy, and that is where interest rates have reached effectively zero, but central banks use other monetary tools. It's basically purchasing bonds and putting that money back into the economy. So those tools are still there, and Australia still has them at its disposal. And while the budget is not as healthy as it was before the global financial crisis, the IMF and other global institutions point out that Australia is still in a very good position to be able to use the budget to support activity in the economy. So thankfully, we know that those things have worked in the past, and we know that they will be an important part of any policy response in future.
Now, if the government isn't successful with its various forms of stimulus packages to try to get the economy moving quickly, how bad could things turn, say, in the next year?
I think it's looking very likely that no matter what, the first quarter of this year, that is, if you like, from the beginning of January to the end of March, the March quarter it's called, there's a high risk that that's going to be negative. We've had the bushfires hit in January, especially very hard across the nation in January. And then we've had the coronavirus effect, which has obviously taken a toll in the last month or two. That leaves the second quarter of the year, what they call the June quarter. And I think that's the quarter where we're going to see whether any stimulus that the government is able to unleash take effect. Obviously, we've also had an interest rate cut by the Reserve Bank. Even the state governments have talked about, you know, doing what they can to stimulate the economy, to encourage, you know, facilitate businesses and so forth. And so let's wait and see. I think that it is possible that if the stimulus measures and monetary policy response is well targeted, then I think it will have to wait and see. Because but if we don't get a good result in the June quarter, then we will probably, we're looking at the possibility of two quarters of negative growth. And that's the textbook definition of a recession. And it would be the first time that's happened in Australia since the early 1990s. So it will be a major event for the country. But, you know, as I say, I don't think it's by any means certain yet. It's quite possible that astute policy responses and responsible action by businesses and so forth might see this crisis, at least the economic part of the coronavirus event, pass, and we get back to a more normal economic sort of situation, hopefully before too long.
Okay, Matt, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks very much.
Thanks so much to our Please Explain guest this week, Matt Wade, senior economics writer at the Sydney Morning Herald. Please Explain is brought to you by the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. Subscriptions power our newsrooms. To support independent journalism, search, subscribe, the Sydney Morning Herald, or The Age. If you're loving the show, rate or review us on iTunes. It helps others find out about this podcast. This episode of Please Explain was produced and edited by Leah Samoglu. Additional audio support from Margaret Corden. Amelia McGuire manages logistics and planning. And Tom McKendrick is our head of audio.